when we're talking about the where it's coming from, it is our own spirit. It is our connection to the invisible. You know, to recognize that it is the source of our being. It is what is animating us in this world. And it's, if you're still alive, it's still coming. It's still flowing. And I've been using JJ's mantra. I know she said it's a song. I tried looking for it and I couldn't find it, but that love is the answer. What's the question? Amen. It's like, love is the answer, and there are many questions that I know have come to me over my lifetime that feel unanswerable. So my love in the situation brings peace, it brings connection, it brings possibility. But understanding the dynamic of where is the source of the love that I'm pouring out? I'm not manifesting it just out of my own digestive system or out of my own personality expression, because there are ways, I promise you, that the ways in which you show love that some people just will not like. Anybody, I have had the experience of thinking I have done a great job or done had a wonderful whatever, dinner party, service, conversation, where somehow it hit somebody in the wrong way. And I'm not saying I'm not denying that I want to be responsible for how the people in my world hear me. But if you are practicing letting love be the answer and love be your expression, you will find yourself much more comfortable in your expression, knowing not everybody's going to like this. And I'm really interested in what the field is calling for. Like, even though, you know, in some ways it got humorous and teasing Heather about standing here, I have told many people, just stand still for a minute, because that source of inspiration actually does have more to say. And what happens is we get nervous, we think we're not going to be able to follow our thoughts, and we can make a joke about it. I mean, I do it all the time. You know, the whole thing, squirrel, you know, you've lost your point of focus. But there is something about just stay still for a minute, and if in a minute there's nothing, there's nothing. But usually there's something, because what's getting in the way is the habit of your mind running the train. Your thinking is deciding what you should be speaking about, as opposed to the source of your being, where your wisdom is. And as Heather was speaking about in the other Heather, in service prep, about mastery, you have to be doing this to be getting some mastery. You can't be just thinking about it. You have to be engaged in your life. You have to be knowing love, because you're expressing love. And not just having some simple formula of what love looks like in what love looks like, and then trying to force that into every situation you find yourself in. The way you love actually is your genius. Barbara always spoke about, let's meet genius with genius and see what happens. Let's see what gets manifested when genius and genius come together. I know she spoke about vocational arousal. What would professional arousal look like? I think that's actually another whole topic. Okay, let's not think about that. Get that. All right, let's all get that out of our head. Vocational arousal is, it's tricky for me, because when I think of my vocation, I sometimes think of my job. And when I think of my job, I think of myself as a teacher or a chiropractor. But what if my vocation is to be masterful at loving people? So vocational arousal would be, I want to figure out how to love even more. I want to know how to let people know how important they are to me more than or more effectively than I do. The invitation when you're teaching is for people to awaken to their own wisdom. It's not to be, I know, you don't, follow me. Hell no. I mean, that's, to me, that might be a great way to be a guru or a some kind of figurehead or something that's totally unsatisfying, because as a real teacher, what you want is people to wake up to their own wisdom, their own stature, their own truth, the reality of who they are. And so I can tell you, when I'm standing here or whenever I'm teaching or in a service, I'm reading the room. You know, how many people are in here? One, two, maybe 50? 50 different people experiencing what you're saying, and so what do you, what needs to be said? Where are the people who are the most hungry, where you actually get to feed them the gift of their own remembrance? When I have touched things that have felt sacred or holy to me, they never felt like, oh, somebody smart told me something good. It always has felt like, oh, right. That's true. I remember. I can tell you from that place, I go to often what Rud was speaking about of readjusting or reassessing, how am I doing knowing the truth that I am remembering right now? How am I doing in allowing things to pass away that I've been holding on to, that are beliefs or ideas or trainings that served me well but don't serve me in the remembrance of what's real? Because I have had a lot of things I've had to let pass away. I've had a lot, and I'm sure there's more. And, you know, you guys hear me speak about the fact that I was raised in the Catholic Church, and in some ways I never felt I was misled until I had an experience of, oh, yes. And then what comes along is, well, that's not what you've believed all these years. And it's not even that I certainly don't think of myself as a Catholic anymore, but there, something you were told at 7 years old doesn't go away until you have a certain amount of mature substance of remembrance for yourself where you feel safe enough to let it go. Safe enough to say, no, I can't do that anymore. And it served me well. There's a way of, as Cease was saying, if it doesn't look like love, love's the answer. Loving the fact that that served you well is a really good practice. Because most of the time it served you well because it kept you from taking risks that would have been dangerous for you. And while that might seem dramatic, there are ways in which you've been in the world to keep yourself safe that you don't realize you're even doing it. You just are wanting to make sure, like, is there anything wrong with wanting to make sure people accept you and that you don't feel excluded? Doesn't everybody love to be excluded? No, we don't. And you, like someone said to me, well, don't you just love when people correct you in public? It's like, no, nobody likes that. But there are ways in which we have protected ourselves from circumstances where that might happen. And one of the ways in which we do it is by doing nothing. Because if you do nothing, no one can be critical of you're not doing anything. And I'll tell you what, doesn't work. Because even when you're doing nothing, people think you're doing something, and people are critical of the fact that you're doing something in a wrong way, even though you think you're doing nothing. Does anyone follow that besides me? It's really, really true. It's like, I'm just sitting here. I don't like the way you're sitting there. You got an attitude. And I mean, really, I've seen people look at and say, what's, like, I can tell anybody, I can tell just by looking at you. Or what's that look on your face for? Got a little agita. You know, it's not, that's an Italian thing. Most people don't even, that just means gas in Italian. You know, sometimes you're just not comfortable in your body and it looks, shows up on your face. Or agita means the stomach. Anybody else know that word, agita? Means agita, agitated. The best attempts to not disturb the waters. Because the waters are meant to be moving. And if you're doing nothing, you're disturbing the waters by preventing yourself from moving. I spoke 2 weeks ago about stepping into the river. You're never stepping in the same river twice. Not only is the river, the water changed, and the atmosphere around the water changed, but you have changed. And even if you turn around and look at where you've come from, your view of that has changed. I've had to very specifically forgive some of the things that I see when I turn around and look. What were you thinking? And I also then have to let love pour in and say, you did the best you could. And you may need to apologize, but we barely ever remember the circumstances as they were in the present day. I had a very specific experience in a business relationship where we were both part of Sunrise Ranch, both longtime emissaries, and we came together as partners. And when that blew up, nothing was on paper. And when the person who came in to be the mediator interviewed us both, they said, were you ever in the same room? Because we remembered it so differently. Totally different emotional investment. Totally, I was the one, this is, of course, you're going to get my side of the story. I was the one giving them money without being paid, and they were feeling like, we were giving you a job, why would we pay you? You don't have any patients yet. I was covering for them because they got so sick they couldn't work. They were saying, why aren't you generating a practice when I'm taking care of all their patients? So, I mean, I'm not trying to make them wrong and me right, but I can tell you, first of all, always get a partnership down on paper. But secondly, you have to be loving and compassionate to yourself about the fact that you're probably remembering it with some emotional tie, some mental understanding. And I have often preceded my reports with, as I remember it, or how I felt at the time, knowing there is almost always bias. It's impossible not to have it, so you might as well own it. Because how you were feeling at the time, who you were on that day, mattered. I have a ritual I do with some friends that we talk about we're thankful for. And this morning I was saying, I'm thankful to be conscious enough to know that how this technology works and how parts of myself are still being transformed. And the best way they get transformed is by participating in it. Thank you, everybody.